Welcome back to another episode of Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. This is your host, Eric Hart.
And Ashley Flowers. Today we're going to be talking about the world of freelancing.
Yes. Luckily for you, both of us have freelanced in New York City, which is probably one of the most common questions I get. Sort of how you start, what it's like, what one can expect. And New York City is kind of a special city. I don't know what it's like in Chicago or LA, but New York City, it's the home to Broadway. It's the home to off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway. It's one of the few places where there's commercial theater as well as plenty of nonprofit theater and plenty of, I don't know, no-profit theater, no-money theater. So you get the full range, and it's got one of the largest communities of props people, too. So
yes, it's very different than working in a prop shop. Because when you're freelancing as a props master, obviously you're dealing with a lot of management, but you're mostly shopping. There really isn't a lot of building for shows. And if you are working on a higher end show, usually that building is from another prop shop. They hire somebody else to do it because there just isn't the time to deal with that.
Right.
And that person doesn't have a prop shop in the city, so they can't really build anything.
Yeah, you kind of you need your own prop shop if you wanted to do building.
Correct.
Some of them, they do have like shops where you could do building. I think like Second Stages and maybe Lincoln Center sort of have that, but a lot of them just they don't have shops. And it's like if you decide you want to build something, you need to do it in your apartment, or you need to rent a shop space or something like that.
Yeah. And you usually don't have the money to rent a space specifically on off-Broadway shows.
Yeah. And I think it's important when you're talking about freelancing, there's a few different kinds of jobs you could have. You could be the props master, like you were on several off-Broadway shows. You could be a prop builder, just doing bits and pieces for a show. Usually, you're not like the prop builder at a theater. You're just, you know, somebody comes to you and needs something built, and you build it because you have a shop or you have access to a shop or things like that.
And you can also get freelance from actual prop shops and just overhire at those shops. Instead of being a freelance builder in itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's a few theaters that have their own shops. Juilliard, the Public Theater. I'm trying to think of any others. Manhattan Theater Club, I think, has a small shop that occasionally overhires. But other than that, there's also a ton of just shops that are not attached to a theater. They're fabrication shops. And you have your big ones like Showman Fabricators, which is still located in the city. They do scenery, but they'll do some kind of prop-related things. And then you just have smaller prop shops. And these range from like a full-on studio with overhire and things like that, all the way down to basically like a one-person shop who decided to, you know, incorporate into a business and maybe takes on overhire like once or twice a year. But otherwise, it's just, you know, a single person working there.
Yeah. And so for me, when I moved to New York, I was doing an internship at Foxwoods Theater for Spider-Man, or now the Lyric Theater, where Harry Potter is. And I connected with a previous intern who connected me with Jay Duckworth at the Public Theater. I called him. He handed the phone to Faye Ramone. And she said, hey, come in the next day. Let's work. So I did. Good attitude. Worked as much as I could. And then ended up just following her around. And because of that, I was able to make other connections. And ended up doing my own shows off Broadway. And eventually, I got to the point where I didn't need to contact somebody. Because of word of mouth, people would contact me. Which I think is very important to know, or I think it's very important for everybody to know, specifically in New York, unclear on other cities, that people know everybody. So if you do a good job on one show, you're going to get another job because so-and-so talked to so-and-so. Sutton Foster came to one of my classes in undergrad at Ball State University, and she said one of the key things to being successful in this business is don't be an asshole.
Right.
I totally believe that to be true, because if you don't have many skills, but you're willing to learn and you have a good attitude, people are going to hire you because they can teach you the skills that you need to be a good props artisan or a good props master. They can't teach somebody how to not be an asshole.
Right. Yeah. And I went through a similar thing where I maybe showed my portfolio and resume a few times, but after that, it's basically all word of mouth, you know, and it starts out fairly specifically, like you built a table for a show. So now I know if I need a table, I'll go to you. And it sort of, you know, it grows from there where it's like, oh, you're somebody I can trust will deliver this on time and within budget and will communicate any questions you have. And yeah, it's like your attitude. I mean, you run into these people who maybe they're a little lazy or maybe they're, you know, a little weird to be around. And eventually you start hearing other props people who haven't met this person and they've heard the same things. And so you kind of see like the reputation of somebody be spread around this community. And eventually like they just, you know, you don't see them being hired anymore.
Yeah.
Because it really is like you run, if you're in props and you run into another props person in New York, it'll probably only take like 2 minutes of talking before you figure out who you know in common.
Yep. So true. It's so true. And another thing I should point out, freelancing in New York City, when you're working off Broadway, is that you have to do a million shows to make rent. Unfortunately, we're not paid well. You're not given an assistant. And I would push for an assistant. And most of the time I was able to convince them that I needed an assistant and always made sure that they got paid something, even though it wouldn't be a great amount. But you're doing so many shows that you can't split yourself into three shows in the same month going from tech to tech to tech. But you need to because you need to make rent.
Right.
So having that assistant kind of helps you balance out your priorities, which is good. But it's very challenging in New York City to freelance. And I've been told, I feel like Buist was telling us this, that he does quite a few shows, or Broadway shows, in just a year, because even then you don't get paid that much.
Yeah. And I've done more of a like a building kind of track in New York. Uh-huh. And so there's a lot of places I worked where it was basically like 40 hours a week at an hourly pay. So I know like working as a prop master, you're usually working with a fee and that's all the money you get for it. And so you have to keep doing that. And that's much different from like, you know, I'm getting paid for the 8 hours I'm here and I know I'm going to be here for the next 2 weeks or the next 3 weeks. And there's a couple places I worked where it was like 4 months of steady, solid work, which is really great because it's, you know, it's definitely when you don't know where your next job is going to come from, it can be a little stressful. And then you find that job that you know is going to last you until like, say, April, and it's, you know, it's February, and you could kind of count on that. You could kind of count on that paycheck. You could kind of count on that schedule. So, and I think probably, you know, as a builder, you have these other options. I worked in display shops, so doing stuff like store displays and window displays, you know, building, you know, pedestals for museums, that sort of thing, building little for sale signs for the inside of shoe stores, that kind of thing. Really sort of prop related as far as skills and shop setup go, but not theatrical at all. But you know, it's like if you could run a table saw, you could find work, you know. If you if you can measure to a line and cut to that measurement, then you can find work. And then a lot of just like you know, pushing boxes kind of stagehand work too. Yeah. At least for me with freelancing is I was always open and always kind of like you would take anything. So it's, you know, you don't want to be sitting around not doing anything, even if your only option is like loading in a ballet and running spotlight for it or something, you know, some weird one-off event, sticking flowers on tables at a benefit concert or something.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of never saying no to a job, as long as it's, you know, dangerous or something.
Right.
But I truly believe each job you do is going to lead you somewhere else and push you in the direction that you want to be. And if you say no to something, you have no idea what you're saying no to, what connections you're saying no to.
Right.
And to freelance, you need every single connection you can get because, as I said earlier, it's hard and it doesn't pay well. I think the highest that I got paid for prop mastering a show was $1,200. Mm-hmm. And that was a 3-month period of, you know, working 70 hours a week on the show. And my assistant, I think, got like 300. And assistants do so much.
Right.
You know, they're running around. They're doing the dirty work for you. And they deserve so much more. And to get to that point, I think it took a year and a half to get to my rate being $1,200.
Right.
And I've talked to other prop masters and some production managers of, is it because I'm just so young or is this kind of it? And they said, well, one, it's because you're young, but two, it gets higher, but you're not going to give $10,000 to show, you know, don't have your hopes up too high.
Yeah. And so I know a lot of freelancers will delve into film and TV because, you know, one of the running gags is your check from film is the same as a check from theater, just with another zero at the end. It really is like magnitudes over what you can make.
Yeah.
This wasn't even film. This was a photography shoot for, I think, Tommy Hilfiger. And I was a standby carpenter. I was literally there with my tool bag, waiting to see if something broke. So not even working. And it was like $250 to be there for the day, you know, barely a full day, maybe 6 hours or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's other, you know, basically like a day player on a TV show or something like that. And you start out at like $250, $300 a day. So it's vastly different from $300 for a 4-month period. So you kind of, if you want to be going for that theater career, you kind of have to supplant it, at least in the beginning it in the beginning with some of this higher paid stuff, just quick make some money kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So you're not like floundering out there.
Yeah. And we're not putting freelancing down. You know, we're just telling you how it is and our experiences because I love to freelance because I love working with new people constantly.
Right.
I love the challenge of a new designer or a new director. When you start doing the same thing, the same directors, the same designers, I kind of just get a little bored. And if it's somebody you don't like and was a huge problem, you can't say, oh, I don't want to work with this person. But if you're freelancing, you can say, you know, I hated this experience and I don't think it's good for me.
Right.
Yes, you might be turning down something, but sometimes you got to protect yourself in those scenarios and your like mental health is like, which is worth more.
Yeah. And there's something great about knowing that if something weird and wonderful came up in the next month, you're free to just kind of take it. You're not kind of like tied down to this job where you know exactly what's going to happen in the next like every month for the next 2 years or something.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what I find exciting. You know, it's terrifying when you're like, all right, I only have work for the next 3 months. I have no idea what I'm going to do after that. But in a weird way, it always works out.
Right.
I never had a month where I wasn't doing a show when I was in New York. And people would email me and say, hey, can you do this show? And I was like, I honestly don't have the time for this. I hate to say, like I said earlier, I don't like to say no to people, but if you can't, you don't have the time, but they understand and they'll keep you in mind for another show. Right. So that's always good.
And I've always found there's certainly, there's like busy times in New York City. I don't know if this is true of every city, but, you know, like the summertime is almost dead. And then all of a sudden that last week in August, you get like 10 phone calls in a row of everybody wanting you to do something like in September. And so you're busy in like September, October, and then it's Christmas. And unless you're on some kind of Christmas show, it goes dead because you got like that Christmas to New Year's week off where nobody's doing anything. And then January's dead.
Yeah.
And then at some time, like late February or March, you know, the pre-Tony nomination season, mm-hmm. where everybody's suddenly doing a show again and everybody needs something and you're like busy, busy, busy. And then, you know, if you don't have something for the summer, all of a sudden you find like it all dries up and June comes and you got nothing going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's still true or if that's true with the off-Broadway thing.
I feel like it was pretty true when I was there like three years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. I felt there was definitely a seasonal situation, and I felt that summer was actually more popular.
Oh, really?
And I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I just felt that I was getting a lot of offers to do shows during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's because people go and do summer stop.
Yeah.
And so the pool is a lot smaller.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's my assumption.
Yeah, there's definitely, and a lot of the audiences too, kind of basically leave the city for the summer.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're all out in the Hamptons, or they're all upstate New York or something like that. But yeah.
Being all fancy.
Mm-hmm.
So to freelance successfully, it is very important that you're marketing and promoting yourself, because if you're not doing that, you can't just depend on the word of mouth of other people you've worked on. You know, you have to be shoving your face into everybody, emailing other props masters. I think it's great when people email other props masters and say, hey, can we just get coffee and talk about your experience?
Mm-hmm.
And get some advice on how to get from here to here when you're, you know, brand new into the city.
Yeah.
Just having those conversations are wonderful and shows the people, oh, you actually are serious about this. You want to learn.
Right.
Maybe when I need overhire, I'll call you.
Mm-hmm.
And I created a website, which I found very helpful because I don't like having a portfolio, and I don't think I actually have one anymore. I probably should, but I'd just rather put everything on a website, send the link to somebody and say, oh, if you have a moment to check it out, you know, feel free, and just see kind of where that goes as well.
Right. And at least some kind of, you know, pictures of work you did. Even if it's a free website, I know when people are starting out, they're like, a website's too expensive. Mm-hmm. There's free ones. It's, you know, yeah. And I know when I'm looking at people's work, if somebody's like 21 and just graduated undergrad, if they got the free banner on their webpage or the ads or whatever, because it's free, I mean, that's very forgivable, at least for me. At least I'm getting the pictures of their work. You know, it's different if you're like, I've been doing this for 10 years and I'm on a GeoCities webpage or something like that. That's different. But at least when you're starting out, you know, you got to get the pictures out there. And
yeah,
I mean, I hate to say this, but at least it's better than nothing. Even if you just have it on your Facebook page and I could just like see stuff that you built, you know, it's kind of the first thing is take pictures of all your work. And if you're a prop master, take, you know, pictures of the show. So you could kind of like point and you get some sense of the scale of show you've done before and some sense of the level of finish and quality of the show that you've done before. Because if you're just talking about it, if it's not a theater that I'm familiar with, and I'm actually not familiar with every single theater in the country, I'm not going to know like what you're talking about, or if I'm not familiar with the show or things like that. So, you know, have the website.
And also for Propsmaster, as you said, having a picture of the whole production, I think that shows the type of quality you expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can look at something and go, oh, that painting's really bad. She allowed that on stage.
Right.
You know, and if you're, I don't know if it would be proper to say, oh, this isn't the quality that I would like. We just didn't have the time.
Right, yeah.
Or that might even be a bad thing to say. It depends on who you're talking to, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know when I'm doing a show, I am such a perfectionist. And sometimes I get staff members who don't really like me because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But if my name is on that, I want it to look as great as it can possibly be. I'm very much into it needs to be extremely detailed when you're holding it next to your face. I know a lot of people do the 30-foot rule, walk away, oh, it looks great from here. But to me, the actors have to hold it.
Right.
They have to look at it. And if you're not giving them the world and helping them create a reality, you're kind of not doing the best that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say it ruins the show or anything. I just think it's a benefit to be extremely detailed. Mm-hmm. And as I said, some people that have worked for me get very upset because of that. But as I said, I want perfection.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll usually, you know, I keep like a running list of all my notes on a sheet of paper and cross them out when I'm done. And pretty much every show, there's still notes on it that haven't been crossed off because I'm always writing down what more could be done. And it's like I'm never finished with the show. There's always something that could be improved or changed or made better or something like that. So it's not like I can't finish the show. It's just that, you know, the show opens and this is the level I could get it to with the time and resources I had. I'm not like, I'm not done at a certain point. I'm like, oh, this is the prop cutoff date. I'm done. This is as good as it's going to be, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think that gets a bit tricky when you're freelancing, especially for off-Broadway or off-Broadway, because you don't have a large budget.
Mm-hmm.
Your time is very limited. It might be you, maybe you and an assistant. You can't go to another shop and say, hey, I need you to build this for me. Because you don't have the money to hire them.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you do have to accept that the quality of what you want is not going to be there. And designers and directors sometimes don't understand that. And that's when you need to tell them, I need more money or I need more time to get the quality that you want. You either need to give me more money to hire somebody to do it or more time for me to do it properly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that whole triangle that every theater people know, you know, the good, the speed, and the money.
Yeah.
It's so true. Yeah. It's a reality for us.
But yeah, with a picture, you can kind of step through and explain all of that and be like, we used this chair because I didn't have enough money to buy one, so we had to pull something from stock.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is where we put the money because of this reason, and this is where we sort of cut back because of these reasons, sort of thing. So pictures are definitely important for promoting. And then, you know, a good business card is always really good too.
Oh, yeah. And one thing about business cards, I get a little frustrated when it's very obvious that you kind of just threw it together in like Word or something and just found a logo and then printed it on crappy cardstock.
Mm-hmm.
Put in the money to get them professionally done.
Mm-hmm.
It represents you better.
Right.
And makes you more of a professional. Yeah, it sucks because you have to throw some money at it.
Yeah. But they don't have to be that expensive. I know. I use Moo.com, and one of the things they let you do is you basically design the back of your card with your name and contact information, and then you could put a picture on the front. And you could get as many pictures as you want. So if you had 50 business cards, you could have like 5 different pictures. So you have 10 business cards with each picture. Or you could have 50 different pictures and it's going to cost the same amount. So it's really, it's kind of great because it's kind of like a mini portfolio. You have like pictures of your favorite props. And so you could like give the person a choice. And so they look through and they see every picture of that you have. And then they pick their favorite one and they take it back. And so that'll remind them like, oh, this is something they built. And I also kind of remember the other pictures I saw at the time, sort of thing. So it's like, you know, your business card, besides giving them the contact information, it's another chance to kind of promote your work, kind of say, you know, you only have that small space to sell yourself, but you could do, you know, with a picture or a little phrase or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely want to put like what you do or what you want to do. Cause if I find a business card that's just a name like months later, I'm like, why did I need to keep this person's business card? Do they build props? Are they a prop master? Are they a sculptor? Or do they have a store? You know, it's like put down your aspirational career goal.
Yeah.
Prop master, you know, that sort of thing.
And I think it's important, give your card to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have a conversation with a single person or you've never met somebody and you want to talk to them, just walk up and say, hey, I would love to talk to you one day about props, yada, yada. Here's my business card. You know, just everybody. Production managers, because production managers hire props people a lot in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And even designers, because sometimes designers will say, no, I want to work with this specific person. And then they find them and it's how it goes. So it's important just to give it to anybody. Don't think you're being annoying. I mean, don't annoy the person. don't pester the person. But just simply, you know, be polite. Give them your card. That's all you got to do. It's going to be helpful.
Yeah. And you never know where a job's going to come up. I was doing a show. I was the prop master on it. And one of the ASMs, so this is like a kid in his 20s, like much younger than me, but he worked with me. And so he got to know what I did. And then he was the ASM on another show. And just through listening to them talking about a problem they had and like, oh, we're going to need to hire somebody to fix this. Mm-hmm. He went like, oh, I know somebody who could probably do that. And so he gave me a call. So it's like, it's not just people superior to you or people like higher up the food chain than you. It could be anybody you're working with.
Yeah.
Even if they don't have the ability to hire you, they have the ability to like tell somebody to hire you or at least suggest to somebody to hire you. So it's, it goes back to the don't be an asshole, you know, not even to people below you.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point for people who hire other props artisans or props masters on a regular basis. Don't assume the person doesn't know what they're doing because they're young. Mm-hmm. You know, don't hire somebody and go, oh my gosh, this person probably doesn't know what they're doing. Like, this is going to be so annoying, but I have to, like, I have nobody else. Mm-hmm. Look at their stuff. Hopefully they've given you their portfolio or website or whatever. Look at their stuff. Don't judge them on their age. Because there's a lot of people that are really good at what they do. And I know for me specifically, I'm 26. And a lot of people who I encounter in this field assume I kind of know what I'm doing. You know, I've been doing it for a while. But when I start talking to them about certain projects or I show them certain projects, they're suddenly like, oh, I never thought you could do this because you're 26. And you just stop judging people, guys.
Right, yeah.
That's the sum of that rant.
No, I totally get that. I have an apprenticeship position, so most of the people I interview are coming directly out of undergrad, and it's surprising. There's a wide range of skill levels from undergrads, and it doesn't really matter what school you went to either. You know, there's people who are like graduating undergrad that you're like, you can run a prop shop somewhere, and there's other people who are like, you have no clue what you're doing. So it's amazing, even at such a young age.
Yeah. And we'll talk in a later episode about, you know, people judging for age and, you know, females or sexism and all that stuff.
That's like 2-3 shows. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's a million episodes. But I think it'll be important for us to share that because there are many thoughts that I'm sure both Eric and I have on that.
Right. Yeah.
But later down the road, people.
Yeah. Totally. But did we want to talk about freelancing in other cities as well?
Yeah. So, Eric, tell us a little bit about your experience in other cities, because you've moved around and freelanced elsewhere. Yeah.
So, it's similar. I mean, you're not going to have the amount of work, but it's similar. I did some stuff out in Santa Fe when I was working at the opera. I also ended up doing some small like concerts, again, just like pushing the soundboard back into the trucks sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And that, again, that was like one of the other guys who worked at the opera. He knew the guy who staffed that kind of stuff. And so then he just put together a crew. He would ask us like, hey, are you busy after work today? Hey, are you busy next week? That sort of thing. Because this is true in New York, and it's definitely true in much other places, is these kind of freelance jobs are never advertised. You're never going to find them advertised. If you're like, I mean, I love offstage jobs, and I love all, you know, other job sites, and those are for, you know, permanent jobs and full-time jobs and summer stock jobs and all these other sort of jobs. But like, showing up to unload a truck for one day, they're not going to post that in offstage jobs. This is all word of mouth. So you just kind of have to get to know everybody that you work with and see who, you know, who has the connection and who's doing this. And the same thing was true when I was living in Louisville, Kentucky. Again, I was like just doing some small little corporate events, like hanging up drapes, that sort of thing. You know, it's nice little money because it's like you show up for 4 hours. Sometimes you get a meal and you just like do the super easy thing and you get a nice paycheck. Like sometimes you get cash at the end of the night, like literally the guy handing out cash to you at the end of the night. And it's like, it's the kind of work you don't have to think about once you leave. You just do it and you're tired and you're done. But it's, again, it's like you're not, maybe if you're really good at Google, you could find the companies and you could figure out who's doing the hiring and you could send your name to them or something like that. But more often it's just like somebody in your circle is in somebody else's circle and they know who's doing it. And you just have to like be open and, you know, let people know, like, I am willing to do this kind of work. Think of me anytime you need this done, sort of thing.
And I think it's great, you know, to tell people what your goals are.
Right, yeah.
You know, my goal is to be an artisan in the city. My goal is to be a props master at a regional theater. You know, setting up those goals, they're going to most likely give you jobs that will help you towards that goal.
Right.
Which is great. Like I've said many times, props people are always willing to help other props people, in my experience.
And yeah, you kind of, you just have to like promote your work and you have to promote the work that you want to do. Like everybody knew I was a carpenter, so I got tons of work doing carpentry, but you know, I wanted to learn molding and casting and sculpting and all that. So I basically had to like do it myself and eventually just start posting pictures of it. And a lot of it, you know, it's just vastly different with the internet. You could post pictures and thousands of people could see it nowadays. And so you do a YouTube video or something like that, and then people get to know it. And so, and it really is like the stuff I post online, people associate that with me. It's like I build a treasure chest. It's like, oh, you can build treasure chests, because it's only props people who are like, oh, you could build anything. Other people are like, I have to see specifically what you built, and then I know you could build that exact same item, and that's all I'm going to associate with you. So
Exactly. Well, guys, it's time to sign off again. Thank you for listening. We had a great time. On another episode, we'll talk about what it's like to be a props master or props artisan in a regional theater, because that's very different from freelancing. So once again, thank you for listening to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. I'm your host, Eric Hart.
And Ashley Flowers. If you have any questions or want to send us some ideas of what you would like us to cover, you can email us at propspodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Silk Mache.
And you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And if you do, please rate and review us. You could also find us on Google Play or any other podcast directory. I'm sure we'll be there by then.
Awesome. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Take care.